compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
And away we go. Let's get this road show back on the road. Hey, I love me some In-N-Out Burger. I don't know if any of you, well, I'm sure some of you have had In-N-Out Burger. If you're in California, you know all about In-N-Out Burger. It's awesome. French fries, not so much, but I do love their hamburgers. And In-N-Out is in a fight with the city of San Francisco. Their health department closed the Fisherman's Wharf In-N-Out location on October the 14th after In-N-Out Burger did not check the vaccination status of customers. And that violates the August mandate from the city of San Francisco requiring indoor diners to show proof of vaccination. Now, it's the same city, by the way, where you don't have to show proof of citizenship, you know, if you want to go vote or do other things that typically are done by citizens. You know, it's a sanctuary city. And so you can be there and not have to worry too much about ICE or the immigration services. So when it suits them, San Francisco is all about breaking rules and flouting that. But boy, oh boy, don't break this rule. Could you imagine going into any restaurant and they say, I'm sorry, we have to know your vaccination status before we can enter your order into the cash register?
Come on, man.
Exactly. You do not know what you're talking about, as somebody once said. Let me hear that, Jim. Let me hear that guy. I need a little Dr. Fauci in the morning.
You got me scrambling here.
Good. Scramble. You can do it, Jim. I have faith in you.
Yeah.
I think when you can I do it, Cyrus, it's hard to tell.
I think but, Cyrus hid these on me, but
all right.
Yeah, no, well, I think
if you can't do it, then I'll pass it by. All right. So In-N-Out operates 358 locations across the Western United States. They're owned by a devout Christian, Lindsay Snyder. It was a family-owned business. They're known for including Bible verses at the bottom of the soda cup and milkshake cups. The location is reportedly open now, but indoor dining is not available. This is the city of San Francisco's fault, of course. As reported in local news, In-N-Out said it properly posted signs of local vaccination requirements, but refuses to strictly enforce them. Our store, In-N-Out Burger's chief legal and business officer, Arnie Weisinger, said, our store properly and clearly posted signage to communicate local vaccination requirements. After closing our restaurant, local regulators informed us that our restaurant associates must actively intervene by demanding proof of vaccination and photo identification from every customer, then act as enforcement personnel by barring entry for any customers without proper documentation. We refuse, he said, to become the vaccination police for any government.
He says, you do not know what you are talking about.
Took you a while, Jim.
Better late than never.
I guess.
I'm trying, Patrick.
I know. Come on, man. I'm going to give you a ribbon that says I try hard.
Thanks.
I gave one of those to Cyrus.
Is that a participation prize?
Let me hear it again.
You do not know what you are talking about.
I like In-N-Out Burger all the more because they're taking this stand. So let me repeat that last line. He says, we refuse to become the vaccination police for any government. These requirements are unreasonable, invasive, and unsafe. And he says that they're asking In-N-Out Burger employees to segregate customers based on vaccine documentation. He says, we fiercely disagree with any government dictate that forces a private company to discriminate against customers who choose to patronize their business. This is clear governmental overreach and is intrusive, improper, and offensive. And I will add, this is me speaking here, and entirely in keeping with the way the state of California tends to run its business nowadays. Anyway, so there it is. So it's yet another reason to love In-N-Out Burger. And I would love them more if they came to Ohio. 888-914-9149. Let's go to Kelly in La Crosse, Wisconsin. Hi, Kelly.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I just wanted to follow up with your news sharing earlier about this morning about the NIH admitting that the Wuhan lab was doing the research that they said they weren't doing.
Well, that Dr. Fauci said that they weren't doing. Right.
Yeah, yeah. And Dr. Fauci lied to Congress. Why is there no ramification no follow-up to Dr. Fauci's lying to Congress.
One wonders, doesn't one?
I heard this yesterday, and then I heard it this morning on your show. I heard it yesterday on a different radio show. And it's just like this information is crucial.
Well, I don't know why there are no repercussions. I would like to see some, but
right.
I, you know,
but it's just appalling. If anyone else lied to Congress, there would be ramifications, especially about
you would think
major health situations.
Mm-hmm. You would think.
I just feel like this type of information needs to be shared. So I'm glad you shared it on your show. I'll definitely be passing this information along to people I know. It just shows you the hypocrisy in our mm-hmm. country.
I understand. If you'd like to share the article that I was quoting from, you can get that on the show Twitter feed, at P Madrid Show, or you can get the same thing on the show page, relevantradio.com/Patrick. You'll find the link to that article. That would be a good thing to have, you know, if you're going to be sharing the information.
Yeah. Say it again, relevantradio.com/Patrick.
Oh, yes, yeah, sorry. Right. relevantradio.com/Patrick.
All right. Do you have any okay. more information you can share at this time about that?
Well, that's the story that broke. So that's what I know, is that the National Institute of Health, they officially said, yeah, there was funding in the Wuhan laboratory. And it was for gain of function, which, as the article specifies, is taking the virus from an animal and then amping it up. I'm using layman's terms here, but amping it up so that it's more transmissible to human beings. And
right. And was this week?
It was this morning.
That the NIH, it was this morning. Okay.
Yeah. Or at least it was reported this morning. It may have been yesterday when they made the announcement.
Yeah, I heard it.
But it directly
on...
contradicts Dr. Fauci.
Right. Right. I'm just flabbergasted that, I mean...
It's somebody in the government might lie.
I know you do not know what you are talking about.
Thank you for sharing that. I do believe you know what you're talking about, and I thank you for your sharing of information on your show.
Thanks, Kelly. I appreciate it.
Thank you for taking the stand.
We do our best. Yeah, you're welcome. Thanks for calling. Let's go to Tracy in... Is it... New Bern, North Carolina? Is that the right town?
Yeah. Hi, Patrick.
Hey, welcome.
I have a question for you regarding the reality of heaven. My sister okay. and I, we were raised Catholic, and I know that she hasn't been a practicing Catholic for years, but I just assumed that she believed in heaven, and the majority of the precepts, I just kind of figured she was lazy about her obligations. So okay. we were having this conversation the other night, and she said she doesn't even know if she believes in heaven, and like, what are we here for? And rather than what came to my mind is, well, yes, there is a heaven. I did say that, but I also thought, you know, we're here to love and worship God. And I didn't want to stop the conversation there. So I thought, you know what, let me ask Patrick so that I can maybe open the conversation more rather than say something and close it.
No, it's a great point. You know, this may sound a little bit crazy, but give this a try. I would get her the St. Joseph Baltimore Catechism. I've got a copy in my hand. And have you ever seen this
one.
Before? Okay, good. So you've got the one with the drawings, a lot of
yep,
red
yep, yep.
in the drawings. Okay. Try giving her that. And the reason I say that is because it starts at the very beginning. Question one, who made us? God made us. Who is God? God is the supreme being, infinitely perfect, who made all things and keeps them in existence. Why did God make us? God made us to show forth his goodness and to share with us his everlasting happiness in heaven. And it goes on from there. Now, the reason I suggest maybe giving this a try is because it could well be that she's just sort of lost track of all the basic building blocks of the faith that she once had. And perhaps something as simple as a refresher might be enough to spark things or to start the engine for her. And as you know, if you have this book, it's very interesting to read. The pictures are interesting, retro. It's simple, but it's very direct. And
I used it with my son with the Seton Catholic Homeschool a year ago. We were doing that for like 2 years. And yeah, it is very simplistic, but it gets to the point and, you know, details.
It does.
Now, is there any other book that you might recommend, do you think?
Oh, there are plenty, plenty. The Baltimore Catechism may not be what's needed here. I'm just tossing it out as a possibility. Yeah, there are a lot of books. Like, I would recommend Dr. Peter Crafe's book. It's called Everything You've Ever Wanted to Know About Heaven. And he approaches the topic not only from the standpoint of Scripture, but also as a philosopher. He talks about, you know, how we can deduce things like God exists and God loves us and God wants us to be happy, and heaven is that permanent state of happiness that we'll have in heaven with him. Maybe something that would just remind her of these things would be good. And he is a very good writer, so I have a feeling that if she were to pick up that book, that it would be absorbing for her, because she would appreciate the beauty of what he has to say, you know.
Okay, great.
Here's another way you can go about it. You can ask her, do you believe in Jesus? What do you think she would say?
Mm-hmm.
She'd say yes?
I think she would say yes.
Okay. And then say, do you believe that Jesus is God? I mean, he rose from the dead, after all. And he said he was God. He claimed to be God. He performed all those miracles. So I think there's a really strong case to be made that he is who he claimed to be. So maybe if you explain that to her, and then just say, well, you know, Jesus talks about heaven a lot. Jesus promises heaven for those who love him. So if Jesus is God, why not believe him? Especially since it's a gift he wants to give to you. What have you got to lose? You know, you could present it to her that way in a matter-of-fact sort of, you know, here's the evidence. Doesn't that seem compelling to you? I mean, if Jesus had never mentioned heaven, that would be a different story, but he talks about it frequently. He talks about hell more frequently than he talks about heaven, by the way. But he does talk about heaven, and he promises that for those who love him and those who follow him. You know, so maybe just a simple thought like that could be enough to spark and get that flame going in her again.
Yeah, well, we're going to be meeting next weekend, so I was trying to have something in hand. We're going to hook up in Washington, and I'm going to take her with me to the Basilica, and I wanted to have some good ammunition for her.
I would try that book by Peter Crafe, then. Everything You've Ever Wanted to Know About Heaven. Okay?
Okay, thank you very much.
You're welcome, Tracy, and I will pray that this conversation goes well, because it would be so wonderful if your sister could recover her lost faith. And I'm happy for you, and really want to praise you, because you're taking a proactive approach to this. You're not just letting it sit. That's good. Thank you. Let's go now to Grace in Fort Lauderdale. Hi, Grace.
Hi, Patrick. A friend recently introduced me to your program, and I love it.
Oh, thank you.
But my question is, can you make some suggestions, or maybe some of your listeners make suggestions as to how we can encourage adoptions in place of abortions?
Well, there are many ways to encourage it. One way, Grace, could be to have a bumper sticker on your car that says adoption, not abortion. And who knows, there may be a young woman who's pregnant and considering abortion, and she might see that, and that might help to tilt her in the direction of adoption. Talking about it, if you're on social media at all, maybe Facebook, for example, if you get some good articles from organizations like Live Action, for example, and maybe post those where people can see it. I think it's like scattering the seed that Jesus talks about in the gospel, about the sower of the seed. Just be very liberal. Spread it out as far and wide as you can, and you don't have to really worry too much about who's going to see it. As long as you're getting it out there, somebody's going to see it. And in God's providence, that may be exactly the person who needs to see that. So those are my thoughts. I appreciate the phone call. Thank you. Let's go now to John in Austin. Hi, John.
Hello. Hey, I've got a double down on what that young lady just said a minute ago, and also the exciting news that we're doing like 400 million memoraries to ban abortion, and actually abortion seems to be waning. So then, of course, we want to get to the next step. She talked about adoption, but also foster parenting. Just imagine these children coming into a Catholic family. And I know you have a big family and know how to make that work. Is there anything that, that Relevant Radio could do in the future to talk up foster parenting and the exciting premises thereof?
Well, you know, that's something I can put in the suggestion box, John. That's for sure. Relevant Radio, especially the leadership team at Relevant Radio, is always looking for ways that we can help our audience and spread the truth in a loving way. So I'll definitely put that in the suggestion box.
Yeah, and I volunteer and work for Child Protective Services, and I can tell you these children, if they do get that far into Child Protective Services, they don't have a place to go like they should. And, wow, just imagine with the Catholic family what we can do to bring Jesus to the nation. So thanks for making that happen.
You're most welcome, John. I appreciate that. Thank you. Real quick, I just want to remind you that we will be praying a novena here at Relevant Radio. We're inviting you to join us. It'll be starting on November the 2nd, and it'll be for the souls of the faithful departed. So if you have relatives, friends, people you care about who have died, and you would like us to pray for them by name, why don't you go to relevantradio.com/souls, and you can tell us the names of the people you want us to pray for. Now, we'll do it in a particular way. Every day at Mass at noon Central, as well as during the Chaplet of Divine Mercy at 3 p.m. Central here on Relevant Radio, and also during the Family Rosary Across America, which is every evening at 7 p.m. Central. And we'd love to pray for your deceased loved ones, and if you let us know who we should pray for, we will certainly do that. And you can, again, give us those names by going to relevantradio.com/souls. How about Annette in Buckeye, Arizona? Good morning, Annette.
Good morning, Patrick. Thank you so much for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I have a question. I was in a class at my parish, and the priest mentioned about if you're late to Mass, then you should not receive the Eucharist out of respect. So I got to Mass late one day, and I did not receive the Eucharist. Is that wrong?
Well, I think I would categorize that as a pious opinion, and the church does not stipulate that as a penalty or a discipline. The church does not say that if you're late to Mass, you can't receive Holy Communion. I think rather that's more likely the priest's love for the Holy Eucharist, the priest's desire for people to be on time. And maybe that's a discipline that he personally thinks should be in place, but you're not, strictly speaking, bound to do that. The church does not require that from you. So, you know, the thing to remember is that on Sunday, you have to make your Sunday obligation. So if you're so late for Mass that you've missed most of Mass, you can still receive Holy Communion, but you still have to go to Mass again. So if it's your own fault. The typical rule of thumb is if you get to Mass before the offertory, then you've been at enough of the Mass to count it for your Sunday obligation. Now, there is a school of thought that says, no, if you miss the gospel, which comes before the offertory, obviously, then you would be you would have missed Mass. I don't hold that view personally. I think the more traditional view is that if you get to Mass before the offertory begins, that is considered sufficient. It's not ideal, obviously. But you can receive Holy Communion nonetheless. You know, I think some people, maybe because the rules are not often explained from the pulpit, they might be a little hazy on what the rules are, including like the fast. Mm-hmm. So it's not 1 hour before Mass starts. It's 1 hour before you receive Holy Communion. Just an hour. It used to be from midnight, which is one reason why everybody was going to those early Masses, 6 a.m. Mass, 7 a.m. Mass, because before you could have coffee or breakfast of any food of any kind, you had to, if you wanted to receive communion, you couldn't receive communion unless you had kept the fast from midnight on. And then that was relaxed to 3 hours, and now it's been relaxed to just 1 hour. So Okay. These are all little disciplines the church has in place, but that particular one that you heard is not one of them.
Okay. He's a very reverent priest, and I really, really love his masses. He's very, very intentional, and it was a class that he was doing for the community to understand what we do and why we do it in the Mass. Mm-hmm. And I think there was a big, a large amount of people at that particular parish who were like leaving before Mass was over and things like that. Mm-hmm. And I think that may have been, but I understand. And it was during COVID. And so they were live streaming. So, mm-hmm. On that particular day, like if there were, you know, any chance that I was going to be late, I would always be listening live of, mm-hmm. you know, so then when
well,
I got there,
COVID,
but I still, because he said that I didn't.
Right. I respect any priest who is seeking to shore up and strengthen his flock's love for Jesus and the Eucharist. So, I mean, mm-hmm. I respect him. I wish, well, I'll leave it at that. I respect him. And
yeah.
I'm happy for you that you have a good, faithful priest like that. Thanks, Annette. I'll be right back.
Yeah.
Today's programming sponsored by Solidarity HealthShare. Information on their health plans available at CatholicHealthShare.com. That's CatholicHealthShare.com.
Keeping it relevant. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Join the conversation at 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. The Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
A little change of pace there. You like that? I want to share something with you that I saw. This is unbelievable. I just posted this on Twitter. In 1999, an Australian man named Bill Morgan was declared dead for 14 minutes from a heart attack. Later, he was revived and lived unscathed. To celebrate his survival, he bought a scratch card, a lotto card, and he won $27,000. I'm sorry, he won a $27,000 car with the scratch-off lotto card. The news team that reported on it asked him to reenact the scratch card moment, so he bought another scratch card, and he won $250,000. And there's a story from the Daily Mail that gives the background to this whole thing. Pretty amazing. True story, too. So, I mean, I don't think I could top that. Let's go to Anita in St. Louis. Good morning, Anita.
Good morning, Patrick. I have a question.
Okay.
How would you respond to somebody who has such a strong feeling against the Catholic Church because of the sex scandals?
Mm-hmm. Well, is that person a former Catholic or a non-Catholic?
Yes. Former Catholic.
Former Catholic. Okay. I have always thought it strange that somebody would leave the church because somebody else in the church did not live up to the church's teachings, to the teachings of Jesus. It's never made any sense to me. So when I've had the occasion to talk to people about this, I've brought it up in the form of, you know, this is a non sequitur, which means it doesn't follow. It doesn't. Why would you leave the Catholic Church simply because of some bad bishops and bad priests? I mean, there are plenty of bad lay people too, but it doesn't make any sense. Why would you do that? And just ask that question. Well, I don't feel I can trust. Well, I mean, do you trust Jesus? Yeah. Okay. Well, Jesus said, upon this rock, I'll build my church and the gates of hell will not prevail against it. He didn't say that there wouldn't be difficult times. In fact, Jesus said, you know, the wise man is the one who hears these words of mine and does them. He is like a man who builds his house on a rock. And he describes how when the storm comes and the winds and the waves and everything are beating against that house, it doesn't collapse because it has been built solidly on a rock. And of course, Jesus said, I'll build my house on a rock, the rock of Peter. So the way I figure it, I would tell this to your friend, I would say, you know, Jesus isn't saying that the church won't have terrible ordeals that it will go through. And this the priest scandals, the bishops and cardinal scandals as well. It's not just priests. this is part of that. I mean, this is part of the waves and the wind that are bursting against this house, but it doesn't fall. So why would you want to, in essence, build your house on sand? That's the wise man. He says, that's the man who hears these words of mine and doesn't do them. He's a foolish man, because that house is built on sand, and when the waves hit it, it falls down. So maybe talk a little bit about that, you know, and ask her, if you really trust Jesus, why don't you trust him in the midst of all this? You know, you're right to be bothered by the scandals. It's understandable. It's normal to have that reaction to them. But what's not normal and what doesn't logically follow is to say, okay, I'm out of here because that guy over there failed. Therefore, I'm going to fail. I'm going to depart from Jesus. Why on earth would I do that? Mm-hmm. If anything, for me, Anita, I'll leave it at this. The scandals make me want to be a better Christian. It makes me want to get closer to Jesus, not further away from him.
Another follow-up question is something that they would say is, well, why did the Catholic Church try to cover it up?
Because bad people.
Again,
I'd just hit it face on, you know, head on. Why did the Catholic Church try to cover it up? Well, it wasn't the church per se as an institution. It was people in the church who knew better and they did the wrong thing. The cardinals, the bishops who were in charge of these things, and they essentially lied, and that's bad. Shouldn't have happened. But that doesn't invalidate the gospel. It doesn't invalidate the mission of the church that Christ gave it. It just means that some people in positions of authority did some really bad things. And we can admit that and deplore that, but that doesn't define the church, and it doesn't, again, just to come back to that, it doesn't in any way give a logical reason why somebody would walk away from the church.
Okay.
I don't think.
No.
There's an organization called the Catholic League. Bill Donahue is the president, I guess, and he has a new book out. I just got a review copy in the mail the other day, and it's on the scandals. And I'll see if I can't find that. I haven't read it yet, but I wouldn't be surprised if it would be a good book for this person, and I'm going to have to look for it. How about this? At the break, I'll be able to find it for you.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you so much, Patrick.
You're welcome. Yeah. And I my heart goes out to anybody who's scandalized by what's gone on in the church. But let's remember that scandal, from the Greek word, it means a stumbling block. And so not only does Jesus promise punishment to those who cause scandal, but you and I have a duty to not be scandalized. So what I mean by that is to not trip, to keep our footing, to not trip over the stumbling block that is caused by somebody else. I think we have a duty as well to try to be to maintain our balance. And so scandal is bad enough, but it's made even worse if those who are scandalized by it walk away from the faith. I appreciate the phone call. Let's go now to Jackson in Albuquerque. Good morning, Jackson.
Good morning. So I've heard you last Friday, and I think it was Monday, you had people call in and ask you about LARPing and D&D. And as someone who spends 12 plus hours a week on the hobby, I wanted to offer my own slightly more nuanced opinion on the matter, if that's okay.
Yeah, sure.
In response to the question, is D&D bad? I would throw out the response, you know, are action movies bad? Because D&D is a way to tell stories. You can tell any story that you want. And certainly, and I have seen people tell many terrible, horrible stories with D&D. But also, in my own personal experience, since D&D is what actually, the community around D&D is what brought me into the church, you can tell good stories. So, you know, that's sort of my opinion on the whole thing.
Okay. I kind of guessed it would be if you're spending 12 hours a week on it. I'm assuming you probably had a positive approach to it. So what do you make of the people who say that it's bad because of spells and such like that? What's your response to them?
All right. My opinion on those people would be that they're overreacting a little bit in the same way people overreact to Harry Potter. I mean, there is a difference between D&D and Harry Potter, because in D&D, you're the one doing it rather than seeing someone else doing it, sort of. Mm-hmm. But it's still, as long as it's very clearly marked out that, hey, this is a fantasy, then it should be fine, you know.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And in many ways, you could just replace the spells with, you know, place a lot of the magic with weird science or like even just modern science, scientific things that we can do.
Mm-hmm.
So there are ways to get around it if it does make you uncomfortable.
Right. And I guess there are people for whom it is uncomfortable or they don't want their kids going down that path. Is it sort of a recreational hobby for you? Like some people like to play chess or bridge or something. Is it a pastime or are you competitive in some way?
It's just a pastime. I have heard of competitive D&D, but it's not something I've ever actually had a chance to take part in.
I see. Yeah, I'm just curious. I don't really know that world at all. I remember saying when I talked about it a few days ago that when I was working in retail long ago, I remember the board games being sold, but that's, you know, the extent of my connection with it. Well, thanks for calling in. I appreciate you adding some more perspective to this discussion. Thank you. Let's go to Tom now in San Diego. Hello, Tom.
Hi. Good morning, Patrick. In reference to babies who have been aborted, what do you know about baptism by desire? In other words, the ability of either a priest or a layman to baptize that baby even though they have been aborted.
Okay, well, baptism is only, and there's this kind of an irony here because baptism is sometimes referred to as the sacrament of the dead because it's bringing to life spiritually a soul that is inert. It's infusing it with the life of God, etc. But it can only be performed on somebody who is alive, physically alive. So, no, you cannot baptize a dead body. Baptism by desire or baptism of desire does not have to do with our desire for someone else to be baptized. It has to do with that person's desire to be baptized. So even though the parents desire baptism or the church desires baptism or both, that's not the meaning of baptism of desire. So if you were, let's say, an unbaptized person and you wanted to become Catholic and you were planning to be baptized, and your life was cut short suddenly, well, the church recognizes that your desire for baptism would be considered sufficient, and you would receive sanctifying grace. But it's not something that applies in terms of our desire for someone else's baptism, if that makes sense.
Well, it does. It's just a little confusing because yesterday afternoon on Relevant Radio, the opposite was shared.
Well, I didn't hear it, so I can't critique
something.
No,
of course not.
Yeah. So that's what I can tell you, though.
Okay. Thank you, Patrick.
You're welcome, Tom. Thank you. Appreciate it. How about Joseph now in Bellflower, California? Hi, Joseph.
Hi, Joseph. You probably get that all the time, don't you?
I do.
Patrick.
Hey, Joseph.
I spoke to you earlier this week about a different topic, but I woke up and heard the readings for today, and I just couldn't pass this up.
Okay.
Today's reading in the gospel. Tell me if this isn't an excellent way to help our Protestant friends understand about purgatory.
Mm-hmm.
The reading is Luke chapter 12, and the specific part of the gospel reading, Jesus is talking about reading the sign of the times before this part. And this has always puzzled me, what Jesus is saying here, until, you know, you've helped me to kind of understand this whole concept of purgatory, but it makes total sense when you read verse 57 through 59 of Luke chapter 12. Mm-hmm. And I was wondering, do you want to read that and comment on it?
And sure. And why do you... So Luke 12, 57 reads, "And why do you not judge for yourselves what is right? As you go with your accuser before the magistrate, make an effort to settle with him on the way, lest he drag you to the judge, and the judge hand you over to the officer, and the officer put you in prison. I tell you, you will never get out until you have paid the very last copper." And that is a kind of a short form of what we read in Matthew's Gospel, chapter 18, where Jesus gives us sort of the long account of the unforgiving servant, and he concludes with that same mention. It says, and the king being angry delivered him to the torturers until he paid all the debt. So will also my heavenly Father do to you if you do not forgive your brother from your hearts. So it's the same message there, and that's an important point. It usually will come up in an apologetics discussion about purgatory, or at least it should, because notice that Jesus says at the end of Matthew's gospel, he says, thus shall my heavenly Father do to you if you do not forgive your brother from your heart. So, I mean, God is not going to literally put you in a prison. He's speaking here about an eternal life. And so if his teaching is that there is some sort of confinement that you're in and you will be released only after you have paid the very last penny, to use that figure of speech, well, I mean, that's Jesus speaking about something that is going to happen to some people. And we obviously do well to take him seriously and to live accordingly. So, yeah, I agree with you. It's an important passage, and it's helpful for people to see it there.
Yeah, and one other thing that I think is important, too, which always confused me, because I thought, if you're in prison, how are you supposed to pay something? You know, I know they have work programs in prison, but I understand it. If I could just finish what I'm trying to say, the idea that you are settling your debt on the way. That sounds, now that I understand it, that's our life before we die.
Right.
And if we don't settle it on the way, oh, guess what? You're in prison paying the debt until it's paid. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Am I interpreting that right?
Yeah. You are. As long as people understand that we're not talking about the eternal penalty due to sin, that's what Jesus pays. We're talking about the effects of sin. Yeah, it's an important distinction.
Yep. Yep.
Hey, good point, Joseph. I'm glad you called. Thank you. I'll be right back with more of the Patrick Madrid Show. Not much more, but whatever's left, I'll be doing that right after this quick timeout. Notre Dame Federal Credit Union is a member of the Catholic Credit Unions of America. You can find more information and your local Catholic Credit Union at relevantradio.com/banking.
Bass me, man.
Keeping it relevant. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Join the conversation at 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. The Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
I've been told that this is a very based show. I like hearing that. Let's go to Julia in Orange, California. Good morning, Julia.
I'm 11 years old.
11.
My question is, okay. I was doing my handwriting. It's cursive. And we have to write a passage. So today my passage was about the covenant with the chosen people. And I started wondering, are they still God's chosen people?
Yes, you're talking about the Jews?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah, they are his chosen people. And that covenant that God promised them, he fulfilled in Jesus. So the promises God made to his chosen people about the Messiah, the Redeemer, he lived up to his promise. He fulfilled his promise in Jesus. And so now the church recognizes that all of those who accept Jesus are also now considered, you might say, the chosen people. Historically, the Jews certainly have that title in Scripture, but in the church, those who are in Jesus, they now have that status as well, you know, as being chosen by the Lord. Does that make sense? Do you see what I mean?
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. That's a good question. So what is this, a homeschool class that you're doing or for your Catholic school?
It's a homeschool, yes.
That's great. Do you like being homeschooled?
Yes.
That's good. You should thank your mom. I'm assuming your mom's the one who's primarily teaching you, right?
Yes.
Yeah. It's a sacrifice for her to homeschool. There are plenty of other things I'm sure she'd rather be doing, but she loves you and is really anxious to make sure that you get a good education. So thank her from time to time for that, okay?
Okay.
All right. Did we cover it, or is there anything else you'd like to talk about?
We covered it. Thank you.
Good. You're welcome. And tell your mom thank you for letting you call me. I appreciate it. Let's go now to another Orange County, California person, Teresa. It's good to have you on the program.
Hi. Good morning.
Good morning.
Yeah, I have a question about the movie they're going to release next week called Purgatory. And I want to know if that's suitable for Catholic people, that we should support it.
I have never even heard of it. What's it about?
It's about purgatory. I saw the trailer, and it's really scary to me. So that's why I was confused if it was
is it a horror
real
movie?
Catholic movie. So it's kind of, it talks about purgatory and supposed to have parts of Padre Pio, Our Lady of Fatima, parts of their lives. But okay. I saw it, and I know for sure it's not for kids.
Okay, I just pulled it up.
But I don't know if it is.
Just pulled it up on the screen. People, let's see, been wondering about what awaits them after death since the beginning of time. So it says that St. Faustina Kowalska, Padre Pio, these mystics, people who have been graced by the visits from souls in purgatory, are only some of the protagonists in this film. Yeah, so I don't know anything about it. This is the first I've ever heard about it. But if it's a documentary about purgatory, could be interesting. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. But I wouldn't be able to offer you any advice without having seen it, obviously.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
But I'm looking at a website that's got the trailer on it. Did you say you already saw the trailer?
Yeah, maybe because I don't like scary movies. I'm not sure, but...
I don't get the impression. Well, maybe, you know, I haven't seen the trailer, so maybe it is sort of portrayed that way, but I don't know. You got me on this one. I'll have to watch the trailer, and then maybe I can offer a thought later. But I haven't heard of it until just now. Yeah. Oh, wait a minute. Look at this.
Yeah, the movie.
Wait a minute. Narration by a certain Drew Mariani. I didn't notice that till right now. And I'm only aware of one Drew Mariani on planet Earth.
I know.
Doubt there are any others. So if Drew Mariani's involved, it's got to be good.
Oh, okay. Okay. That sounds good.
Okay. Now, if it's another Drew Mariani, I'll eat my words, I guess.
Yeah, that.
I kind of doubt that there's not another Drew Mariani. Anyway, so that's my thought. I'm definitely going to watch that trailer and see what I think about it. Thank you. Appreciate it. Casey in Chicago, it's good to have you on the program. Welcome.
Yes, my question is about Mark chapter 13, verse 32, and it's a question about Jesus' omniscience or all-knowing. If he's omniscient, why did he tell his disciples when they inquired about the second coming? He stated that he didn't have an answer at that, or that he didn't know the date, that only the Father knows the date of his return.
Right.
Which would indicate there is something that he didn't know.
Right. Well, in his human knowledge, he did not know that. So the easiest way to reconcile this issue is to remember that at the incarnation, God became a human being. He didn't cease to be God. He didn't change from God into a human being, but he took a perfect human nature and united it permanently with his divinity. So in his divine knowledge, of course, as God, he knows everything. There's nothing that God doesn't know. Or to put it a different way, anything that can be known, God knows. So Jesus, as God, knows everything. But in his human knowledge, he, of course, had to learn how to speak. He had to learn how to walk. He had to learn how to tie his sandals. He had to learn all the things that people learn as they grow older. And so in his limited human knowledge, there were things that he did not know. And he's referring here to the human dimension of the incarnation. So it's unlike anything we have any experience with. We don't have anything else that we could point to that would be like God and man united together in a single person. But that's how it is in Jesus. So when we run into these incidents, or like when he says, I ascend to my Father and to your Father, to my God and your God, he's speaking there of his humanity, because God can't have a God, but in his humanity, Jesus has a God. it can be very difficult, but if you sort through it by starting at the incarnation and then working your way forward, you know, you can begin to kind of rule out, well, he, you know, it's not that Jesus as such didn't know anything, but you can see how it's his humanity that he's referring to. Does that help?
That helps a lot, because I had, I'm studying apologetics, and that question was instituted, and some of the protagonists were saying, well, this is a contradictory statement in that Jesus is supposed to be all-knowing, and yet at the same time he says there's something that I don't know. So that that answers the question to my satisfaction.
Good. Good. Well, I'm glad I could be of service, and I do thank you for calling, and thanks for listening to the program. Let's go to Alicia now in Santa Cruz, California. A lot of California calls today. Welcome, Alicia.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Patrick, I'm calling to clarify something for my husband. My husband is a convert, just a recent convert over the last 2 years, and he was listening to the Drew Mariani show yesterday. And I guess there was a guest on that was talking about how there was certain sins that could only be forgiven by a bishop. And I think in this case that we're talking about abortion, but I was trying to clarify, or I was trying to tell him that I didn't think that was true, because when you're in the confessional, it doesn't matter if you're in the confessional with a priest or with a bishop, you're supposed to be there with Jesus. Is that correct? Or is there something that I don't know? I'm just trying to clarify this for him, because he was really concerned.
Okay. Yeah, so it's a little bit of both. What, your instincts are correct, and you're right that it's Jesus who is working in the sacrament through the ministry of the priest. But it is also true that there are certain sins that are also canonical crimes. And so according to canon law, the punishment for certain canonical crimes, and abortion is one of them, can only be excommunication lifted by a bishop. So according to the church's law, that's what that's referring to. Now, in recent years, in fact, maybe even before recent years, many bishops around the country simply delegated that authority to the parish priest, so that in the context of a sacramental confession, the priest could not only absolve you of your sins, but could also lift the penalty of excommunication. And that's probably what you were hearing about on Drew's show, if they were talking about abortion as an example of that. So there are two issues here. One is the canonical crime, and the other is the sin. And they coincide in the case of abortion. But the forgiveness of sins I'll just say this. The forgiveness of sins and absolution is a sacramental dimension, and the lifting of the excommunication is a legal dimension.
And I
so
see.
Both of those
and is
are,
there still is there still some sins that fall into that category, or is, is
abortion
that
is
not
one of them?
The case?
Yeah, abortion is one of them. There are certain canonical crimes like striking a priest, for example. You know, that would be another example. Now, a canon lawyer could give you a long list of whatever they may be. I don't have that list in front of me, but. There it is.
Thank you.
To the person who just called in and said they're disappointed with me because I said to the little homeschooling girl that your mom, there are other things that she'd rather be doing, please relax. That's intended to say that the mother of this little child is doing a great, wonderful thing and sacrificing her own free time to help her daughter because she loves her. So you're misinterpreting my comment, and I would like to set the record straight. It has nothing to do with the girl being a burden or anything like that. It's showing how much her mother loves her, that she places her daughter's welfare above the things that she might like to do if she weren't homeschooling. Let's go to, we already went to Casey. Let's go to Katie in Bozeman, Montana. Good morning, Katie.
Oh, hi, Patrick. Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
Thanks. I was listening earlier to a gentleman talking about talking to Protestants online and the comment section, which can be crazy, but I am a Protestant. I've actually called and talked to you before about this.
Oh.
but I am in RCIA as of 2 weeks ago.
Congratulations.
Which is very exciting.
That's wonderful.
Thank you. It's been years of study and research and all of that, and that's why I was calling. Hopefully he's listening, or maybe there's other Catholics listening that might be encouraged by just a couple of like things that helped me go from the very analytical, you know, I was raised Protestant, but to make that leap over to, oh, I hear the music. Am I getting turned off?
Oh, I know. It's a shame. Could you call me, I don't know, can you call me Monday? And we'll pick it up where we left off. Yeah, call me Monday. I'm looking forward to hearing what's going on. And congratulations again for being in RCIA, Katie. Thank you. Please pray for me. I'll pray for you. God bless you.